You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave back from our journey to Lambeau Field, courtesy of you, our listeners. Thank you so much. We sat in, was it section 119, Dave? I think that's what it was, a 45-yard line. We were right on the aisle, right next to the tunnel, 24 rows up. They were spectacular seats. Thank you so much for that.
I agree. Thank you so much. And we should probably apologize to the people that sat around us, because either people would like to sit by us, because we are detailing every play out loud to ourselves, just like we're on a podcast. And either people would have thought, well, these guys shut up, or they would have gotten the great insight that people listen to for free, you know, for nothing. So, but it was a really great time. I packed so much rain gear because I thought it was going to rain. Everything I saw all week was it was going to just pour on Sunday, and it turned out to be really hot. I wore jeans and I was sweating.
Yeah, I sweat right through them. As a matter of fact,
you had kept your jacket on. That was pretty. I bet you sweat probably 10 pounds that game. It was pretty hot.
I wish I would have, but no. I was constantly getting ready. In fact, it clouded up at halftime. I thought, I'm going to be right about this yet. But yeah, as it was a great late September day at Lambeau Field. Dave and I had an absolutely great time, great view of the game, and what a game it was too. I tweeted during the game that first quarter we were talking about it, and we hadn't seen the Packers play that well, even through the first half. Really, I mean, they scored on their first five possessions. It's been a long time since we've seen a Packer offense dominate like that.
Well, here's my theory, though, is I think when we got to the second half, just like everyone else, is it became troubling, right? We went from things are back to normal, Jordy looks like he's Jordy again, and we're back to where we were. And then we got just that sneaking feeling that not all is still right with the offense and the team in general as we went through the second half. But this is my theory about the whole thing. When I drove back from Wisconsin, I got a chance to listen to all the post-game podcasts and stuff. And I think everyone is on the same page. The first half was great. The second half is troubling, but there are things to talk about, injuries. And, you know, you want to run the ball when you have a big lead, you know, a 21-point lead going into halftime. But this is what my theory is that when we watch the first half, I sort of felt like this is the Packers I remember, not just when they would win pretty consistently, but the team I want to see play out there is the team that got coaches fired. Remember when the Green Bay played Dallas and Minnesota, and like the next week those coaches got fired because they got manhandled so badly. And for the first half, when it got up to 31-3, it was, we're not just back to beating the Lions in Wisconsin. We're playing so well, we're making other teams look foolish. But when the second half happened, it took that feeling away. That wait, maybe we're not totally back to that point yet. You know, we're not that so dominant of a team that we get coaches fired. So I think that threw us off, and we didn't recognize some of the things that were happening in the game. You know, I think they did slow it down to run off time on the clock, which is smart. They had a lot of injuries on defense. Detroit, who knows if they're, you know, they're 1-2 right now, but you know, I think they scored on teams. I don't know if they're a miserable team.
Well, Matthew Stafford's always been a good quarterback. His problem was some, you know, shaky decision-making in the past. And, you know, he played very well in the second half. I mean, he went over the middle a lot. He found his receivers. And they did a very good job of time of possession. It wasn't until today, Dave, that I realized, well, one reason why the Packers looked so lousy in the third quarter was they had the ball once.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, and so it's real tough, you know, to get anything going. Rodgers only passed six times in the second half, and one of those was a great pass that was dropped by Davis.
Right.
You know, so yeah, they didn't play great in the second half, but I think there were a couple of factors, and one is they didn't have the ball, and the reason they didn't have the ball is they were playing without five important players on defense. You know, we were sitting there kind of counting them off, and, you know, where's Morgan Burnett? You know, there's no LaTroy Guyon in there. Of course, no Sam Shields. He's in a darkened room someplace.
And Clay Matthews.
And no Clay Matthews. And also, they didn't have Dayton Jones.
Right. Yeah, I think we didn't know that going into the game. As we walked in, I think I learned, I didn't see, like, where's 52? Because they have a lot of guys on defense that they rotate through. And I remember thinking, okay, there's Peppers, there's Daniels, there's, you know, Fracro's playing. Right? And all of a sudden, it's like, wait. And then it came to me, we're missing 52.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even see him on the sidelines. I don't know if TV ever showed him standing around, but I could not see him from where we were. We're on the Lions side of the field. But, yeah, at one point, that defense looked like it was a preseason defense. There was so many guys that were first- or second-year players. And at one point, actually, when they were healthy, most of the time, their three corners were Gunter, Rollins, and Randall. Those are all second-year guys. And Randall went down, then you went to Hawkins, who was a first-year guy. He's
right,
a rookie.
Very young guys.
They went way deep into their defense. And, you know, it showed. It was so many third-down conversions where it seemed like a tight end ran 8 yards, turned around, threw the ball right to him, and then he got tackled. I mean, it was just – it seemed so easy for them to march down the field. And we were watching it happen. It just – it was so frustrating. So I don't – no, if you can – I think the defense for Green Bay is going to be pretty solid this year. They played really well when it counted. You know, the first half, I thought they played really well. Some guys are having really good years. And I wonder if that was the big factor why the offense wasn't rolling because, you know, after the half, the Lions took – was it – I mean, I felt like it was 8-minute drive. I guess I can look that up. It was a long drive to start the second half.
I'm going to say it was 7 minutes, and they left 8 on the clock, as I recall.
That's right. Yeah. So it was about 6.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the Packers came back, and the one possession they had in the third quarter, they did kick a field goal. And I think they were going to score, but wasn't there a holding?
There was a penalty on Bulaga, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the result of that was they wound up with like a 3rd and 20 or something, and they never could punch it in. But they were moving the ball well, and they came away with a field goal. So that, you know, that was something.
Right.
Had I think the defense been able to get even, you know, a couple three and outs, I think they had one in the game. If they could have got a couple of those, but with the guys they were playing, that was a pretty tall task.
Yeah.
Their run defense
was
still good.
Very good. And Nick Perry is playing really, really great. So if he can play as well as he's playing, if Matthews is healthy and playing his average level, maybe, you know, hopefully he's doing better because he's on the outside. He can have more of an impact. And then you've got Pepper sort of roaming around, and hopefully he can show up once in a while. But, you know, you've got two bookends that could rush the passer and create a lot of havoc, not to mention, you know, they really didn't blitz, I didn't think, that much. I couldn't tell, you know, maybe on TV you could see. I felt like they were putting a lot of guys in coverage, and they just – that zone defense just allows guys to find open spots and catch the ball. But The one thing it does do, I mean, that when the Lions scored, it took them 12 plays, 10 plays, then they punted, and then 6 plays, and then the Packers were able to run out to play. So, I mean, they did have to take some time off the clock, and I guess that worked. I just wish they wouldn't get it down to that close. I mean, they were down to 7 points. We were one first down away from really making this a nervous game.
You know, one thing that was, you know, striking being at the game, unlike last year, we were down the fourth row last year, and it was tougher to see. We were 20 rows higher this year, and you can really get a great view of, you know, how teams are playing the Packers and how the Packers play the other teams. And it was noticeable, you know, when teams would go single high safety, then you could see if they were playing man-to-man coverage and how, you know, Rodgers is making these hand gestures. And at one point, we – you know, looked over each other. It was the end of the first quarter, and we said, my gosh, they have single coverage on Davis and a single high safety. I think Rodgers is going to go there. Well, the quarter ended, and then second play or the first play of the second quarter came out in the same defense. And we looked at each other, and they're going to go along. And sure enough, you know, they did, and that was the long pass interference to Davis. So it's very interesting when you don't – on TV, you just kind of get the box. You know, you get what's happening at the line of scrimmage, you know, maybe immediately in the backfield, the first line of defense. But you don't really see how they're playing these coverages. And so we could see when the Packers were on defense how they were, especially when they got the lead, how they were, you know, kind of playing that, you know, bend but don't break. And that worked out effectively, except, of course, when Josh Hawkins fell down. But right. When that wasn't happening, they were, you know, almost like they were willing to give them 8 or 9 yards. They just didn't want to give them 29 or 30 yards.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's frustrating, I think, for a fan. I know it was for me because you wanted to see them, you know, stifle that. But what they were really doing is sort of rope-a-dope. I mean, they were letting the Lions go on these long drives. The clock was in their favor in the second half. So, yeah, if you're going to score but take 7 minutes to do it, you know, and Packers at that point were up like not 20, they were 21 because it was 31-10 at the half. So, you know, yeah, you got to score 3 touchdowns. Fine, you know, eat up all that clock. And as it turned out, you know, the strategy prevailed. It was just kind of frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I guess there's two approaches. Is you can say, look, you've got to score 3 more touchdowns than we score, and you've got this amount of time to do it. That's a pretty tall order, so we're just going to make sure that almost physically impossible to make it happen if we just make you march down the field one sort of first down at a time. Or you could say, look, let's give up some deep balls if that's you know, if we get burned, but we're coming after your quarterback. We're going to blitz, and we're going to put the hurt on you. And I know some teams have that philosophy, and maybe Dom would do that in another time, but he didn't have Matthews, Burnett, Sam Shields. Maybe Burnett and Sam Shields alone.
Yeah.
You just say, look, I can't afford – and you just saw Josh Hawkins fall down.
Yeah.
And you think, wow, that – how long was that? That was
70 yards, was there something better?
73 yards. Yeah, that took – that was a touchdown in – 38 seconds, and in 38 seconds per touchdown, you can catch up.
Right.
So is you know, as much as I want to see them put Matthew Stafford on the cart, actually that's not true. I have nothing against Matthew
Brutal.
Stafford, but you know you want him to just knock them around. The downside is I would be apologizing if all of a sudden they scored 2 touchdowns in 38 seconds apiece and like all right, that was stupid. We should be slowing this down. So, I mean, maybe they took the wiser course as it was, and the Packers just made it more difficult because, you know, the offense did kind of not come through in the second half. The field goal was you got the holding penalty on Bulaga. There was a third down where Cobb and Rodgers didn't connect, so they ended up punting in 5 plays, and the Packers only took 3 minutes off on that drive. And the one that really hurt was it only took a minute 30 seconds off of their second to last drive, and the big deal was the Davis. Is it Trevor Davis? I heard Travis Davis somewhere. Trevor Davis's drop, which we saw it happen right in front of us. I mean, again, he was single coverage. I think it was single safety. I think they're trying to put a stop to Eddie Lacy, and then he flies down the field. And you could tell the corner just started turning to run, and he stopped, turned, and the ball was right there. And it was a great, great play, right? Yep. Just dropped it.
Hit him right in the chest.
But, Ted, this is what happens when you play with rookies. They're going to make mistakes. I mean, I think everyone in the stadium was like, oh, that hurts, but he's a rookie, right? Well, that could have cost us the game. If you're going to go and be the youngest team every year, you're going to have to put up with this stuff. And, you know, that almost hurt us. But they ended the game well. Eddie Lacy, you can tell there is love in the stadium for Eddie Lacy,
man.
Right?
See, I never heard the chant on TV, but when you're sitting in the stadium, every time the guy touches the ball, people are chanting, you know, Eddie. I mean, people love them, you know, some Eddie Lacy. And I speculated on Twitter that it's probably because he's built pretty much like most of the fan base.
Yeah, most of the people in the stands. That's right. I mean, but he runs guys over. You know, he seems like a super nice guy. You know, he hasn't complained about his weight or said much, but Yeah, we can all relate to someone who needs to lose a few pounds, right? That's so. But then he had a couple runs.
Oh yeah.
And there was one scrum where it felt like he had a gain of two, and then the pile moved five more yards. And so you love that stuff, right? I mean, that's a fan pleaser kind of a thing. So yeah, I think people love Jordy. Jordy came out the reception for him when they announced his name, and also when he scored touchdowns. I mean, it was like, you know, everyone loves Jordy Nelson, but people really love Eddie Lacy too. And that's kind of cool because I do. I like him. I want him to succeed. I want them to give him the ball and see him be successful. I don't necessarily want them to give James Starks the ball anymore. We talked a little bit about that on the way out. It feels like every time Starks is bouncing everything on the outside, it's a gain of two or three at best. Even in the pass game, I just don't feel he's very elusive anymore. I think when they keep kind of rotating him in, it feels like those are just wasted downs when they give him the ball.
Yeah, there's something, you know, I know he was the running back when they won the Super Bowl, and he can at times be effective, but it's because, you know, he gets just a few carries a game. He doesn't get a chance to get, you know, kind of momentum going. He had just the one carry in the game and lost a yard on it. There seems to be something lacking when he's in the game. And I think it might have something to do with just that he doesn't really get a chance to get himself on track. Now, on the other hand, if something does happen to Lacy, and it has in the past, you know, he's had a concussion, he's had an ankle injury, it's good to have a guy like Starks around because he's competent. I think if he was getting, a dozen carries a game, he'd be a lot more effective. But you don't want that. You want Lacy to be the guy getting the majority of carries. He got 17 of them yesterday, broke the 100-yard mark, had a 25-yard gain along the way, averaged 6 yards a carry. I mean, he had a very, very good game. And the thing you notice also being at the stadium are the things like, you know, when he gets slowed down and yet that pile, he's able to be strong enough to move that pile. And, you see it on TV, but you don't really appreciate how powerful that guy is and what he's actually doing to move that pile. And, of course, he gets a little help from some of the linemen pushing on the pile. It is really a power game. That's something he gives you, that Starks, who's powerful himself, but he's no Eddie Lacy. That's for dang sure.
Yeah, and he runs pretty upright.
Right.
I feel like once he gets stopped, he's kind of easy to bring down. But let me ask you something. I've heard a lot on other kind of shows and things talk about this game. They didn't put Randall Cobb in the backfield. They used Ty Montgomery in the backfield. Yeah. And one of the things that I've always talked about is that I wish they would have a third down back that could catch the ball and make someone miss and take a 2-yard pass into a 15-yard play, right? And I feel like they don't have it. I thought maybe the guy they picked up Minnesota could play that, but you told me he was cut and he sits on the back end of my fantasy football team, so I need to do something about that. But Ty Montgomery could play that role, and I thought, you know, Cobb could too, but I'd rather have Cobb out and running patterns out in the field. But Ty Montgomery could be a guy, you know, he's pretty versatile. He's good on special teams. I think he's bigger, a little bit bigger than Cobb. He could potentially block if he had to. But I think what I saw, there's a few throws to Lacy. There was a bad throw to Lacy. There was a short pass. There was, I think, at least one pass to Starks, which he got, I guess, 9 yards at the end. Let me see. How many catches did Starks? So they each got one catch. They threw them twice. But those two guys, Starks and Lacy, are not going to be a factor coming out of the backfield and making really something happen, I don't think. But Ty Montgomery, I think, could. I think you have enough receivers where you could run, you know, three or four wide receivers and have Ty Montgomery go out and beat a linebacker or a safety. And and he's a punt returner. I mean, he could make a short pass into a longer pass or a longer play. So I think that actually could be something really interesting as we go down the season. But people were real negative that I heard about it. What do you think about that?
I heard the same things that a lot of people didn't like him in the backfield. I think Gary Ellerson was one of them, and he wasn't alone. I mean, there were people that were thinking that, you know, there was a waste to have him there. But I agree with you on this one, Dave. I think that he's a bigger version of Randall Cobb. I don't like Cobb in the backfield. I don't think he's big enough. I don't want to see him running through the line, even though he has been effective and it is a way to move him around. I would rather see a bigger guy like Ty Montgomery in that particular role. Now, I know he's had, you know, some injury problems. It really kind of ruined his rookie season. But now, allegedly, that he's healthy, I think that's a very good place for him to be because he does have more physical substance. He is good if you can get him out in space on a screen pass of some kind or a swing pass. I think that's a good way to use him. In fact, I even mentioned we're walking back to our car, and thank you very much, Mike, for letting us park on your yard. We appreciate that. When we're walking back, I would actually like to see him put both Cobb and Montgomery in the background in the backfield next to Rodgers on either side, and then I'd like to see those guys kind of both run a swing pass or that angle pass, and then give Rodgers options. I'd like to know how a defense would cover both of those guys coming out of the backfield. I think it'd be very interesting. But if it has to be one of the two of them, I'm with Ty Montgomery. He's just a physically bigger guy, and I like them using him in that way. And as far as I'm concerned, Dave, I think he can return kickoffs if he's going to be as smart as he was, Stanford smart, as I mentioned on Twitter. That's the second time now that a Packer kick returner has done that in the last, 5 years? That going out of bounds, touching the ball, and then getting it at the 40. That was really sweet.
That was great. I guess Randall Cobb was the other?
Yeah, is that correct, sir. Yep.
When that happened and it bounced out of the end zone, I thought, oh, no, this is becoming a disaster. Then when he laid down and got it, and I didn't see the replay. I don't know if they showed the replay. We were looking for it. On the board, but I'm sure on TV they showed it a few times, and I know they talked about it. It was a super smart play because that was potentially on the 1 yard line,
mm-hmm.
and it went out to the 40.
Sure. Yeah,
as a 39 yard penalty, basically that he created. I was talking to somebody. They said, I don't like that rule. That's not the intention of that rule. That's like kind of using the rules to your advantage. What do you think about that? I feel like. No, this was a Lions fan I talked to. It was my dad. It made him angry, and I thought, well, look, I don't know what the right rule should be. It is the rule, and I guess that deters people from kicking off really close to the corner. I mean, someone could, in theory, just stand on the goal line and try and catch it from there. So it makes you want to kick more in the field. Do you think it's a bad rule?
Well, yes, I do, but it is a rule, and how many times have we seen in any sport, people take what is otherwise probably, a logical rule and subvert it to their advantage? I mean, it happens all the time, and that's why there's a rules committee, and they usually change those things. The first time the Packers did it, it was a novelty. Now that they've done it again, I wouldn't be surprised if they do move, to change the rule or maybe just to tinker with it a bit. So players won't do that. It doesn't happen a lot, and that's why I think it has really kind of escaped scrutiny.
I'm trying to think, what is the spirit of the law? I mean, are they trying to say, look, if you catch a kickoff and you happen to be staying out of bounds, you really kicked it out of bounds, therefore you should get on the 40. I don't really know what the rule is supposed to protect or what's the penalty there.
Well, my guess was, I don't have much going on apparently in my life, so I thought about this. My thinking was that, okay, let's say guy, kicks off and he's trying to angle it toward the corner and the returner comes over and, as he's running for the ball, he catches it, but he's out of bounds. Well, really, the kick is out of bounds. And so, therefore, it should be the 40, even though he caught it when he was out of bounds. That's my thinking. It's something along those lines. I would like to know if anyone does know the actual backstory behind that, because as I thought about it, that was about the only way I could figure why they would have a rule like that. And until Randall Cobb did it, I didn't even know that was a part of the rules.
Yeah, I guess that it almost feels like a rule that doesn't need explaining. I mean, if a guy catches out of bounds, it's out of bounds. I get why, but I guess you could say, look, if you don't touch it, if it's out of bounds, then don't touch it. But if you do touch it and you step, yeah, I guess that maybe you've onto something there. But it was a smart play regardless.
Yes.
But going back to Ty Montgomery, one thing I want to clarify, I don't really want them handing off to Ty Montgomery. I mean, maybe that's something that you do
as a
draw play.
I'd be okay with that compared to Randall Cobb. Yeah.
True, but that's not, I think, the strength of that offense. Or if you put Ty and Randall in the backfield together, that you're going to run the ball. I don't even care if you telegraph it, that when Ty's back there, they're going to pass. Because I think it gives you a lot of options. And one of the things I think that teams do is if you have Montgomery in the backfield and these linebackers and safeties are playing our receivers deep in tight coverage, you throw a swing pass out to Ty Montgomery and he beats one guy. Like Rodgers, there's like 10 to 15 yards of real estate that's wide open because they guys have their backs to the ball and they're just blanketing Nelson and Cobb and Adams. So I hope this is something that could be a development. I think they could almost dink and dunk down the whole field with, you know, those two guys coming out of the backfield. They still have Nelson and Adams and then say Aberderis and maybe Janice could, you know, still play the wide receiver roles and still have those other two in the offense. You know, get your best guys on the field all the time.
That's something I want to touch on. The dink and dunk model. And right away in the game yesterday, Packers came out three wide receivers, and they were using a fullback and a running back. And what was great about that was that they were passing in rhythm. Well, they ran to start off with, and they got to be passing the ball down the field in rhythm, like we were so used to seeing. And I have to say, because everyone was watching for it after the Vikings game, they did a really good job, I thought, of mixing up personnel and formations, even if it was the same personnel, flipping them to be, you know, different sides of the field. And again, something you might not necessarily notice on TV when you kind of follow the ball more or less because the camera does. But when you can look at those formations and see, you know, what they were doing to kind of keep it fresh so they could do that ball control kind of offense. It was really good to see because we just hadn't seen it in so long. And you kind of sat there and said, oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah.
It was really nice. There was only a couple of times that we noticed, and again, we were looking for it, you know, when they were, like, you know, stopping to look back at Rodgers. I think they did take one timeout they had to take because they couldn't get themselves – organized, but generally speaking, there was none of that. A lot more decisive. Rodgers, I thought, you know, looked like, well, for lack of a better term, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he was well over 100 in his passer rating, 129. They said, I don't know if you heard this on the podcast, Dave, but apparently Rodgers was captured on TV saying, you know, I'm back, and then he used an expletive to kind of underscore the fact that he was back. And, you know, from where we were sitting, even though there were great seats, we weren't privy to that. But apparently he was even feeling it. So I think that they can do what you want them to do as long as they give up this idea of this, you know, quote, tempo, where you keep the same personnel on the field and, you know, you rely on Rodgers to, you know, call out, you know, different plays every time and it takes the entire clock for them to get themselves organized. I liked a lot better what they were doing this time, shuffling out personnel, changing up the formations. I think that was a lot, you know, sounder strategy to take forward the rest of the season.
Yeah, that was something we watched really closely. Is we saw they had two tight ends, two wide receivers, and a back. They have three wide receivers, Lacy and one tight end. You know, we were kind of watching that, and we thought the first touchdown at least that. Maybe the first two, we thought they were scripted plays because they came
they
up
so
the line
precise.
Of scrimmage.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and it was just bang, bang, bang. There was no change in the play at the line of scrimmage, and everything seemed to work, and they just moved right down the field. And execution was great. It's hard to know, like, it was perfectly called, but if it's not executed, then it looks like the whole thing is a mess. I mean, the Trevor Davis was a great call, and he drops it, and they end up punting, and, you know, McCarthy's an idiot again. But it looked like what they did early was shades of what they've done in the past. And it feels like everyone has figured this out. And so I'm glad to see that they're not being stubborn. They had a lot of different groupings. Although what they would do is, I remember in the first drive, they only had two sets of groupings, if that's the right way to say it. But you're right. Every time they did a new play, they were all in a different location. Sometimes Cook was hand down. Sometimes he was out as a receiver. Lacy one time came out wide. But every play with the same grouping was something different. And then they went from the blocking back, Rutkowski, to kind of back to their traditional. But they scored. And I don't know, maybe Rutkowski may have gotten hurt. Maybe they had other
factors. Yeah, he hurt his back during the game. We noticed he was out and didn't know why until afterwards that he was injured.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is very encouraging that they're willing to change. I thought there may be a non-willingness to change. I thought it would take the bye week for them to readdress maybe what they're doing. I just hope that, you know, I still think teams have a certain way to play the Packers. I thought the Lions a lot of times bunched their defenders all at the line of scrimmage or slightly behind. They did a lot of one safety instead of two deep, which was what really killed them, you know, in the past. But I felt like they play press coverage, but they leave the receivers out. I thought a lot of man-to-man outside. And I wonder if the book on Rodgers and the Packers right now is that you can take away all the stuff in the middle, you know, make sure that you clog that up, and don't worry about the receivers going downfield and burning you because they're not that fast. Or, you know, Rodgers is not as accurate as he used to be. So some of the back shoulder stuff or dropping it right in there, you know, he doesn't do that as well. Because I thought Nelson and Cobb were left alone with, you know, one safety to help out if there's a problem. That's where I think Davis is kind of important for this team. I think he needs to draw attention that he gets double coverage. And if he's going to drop balls, that's going to be a problem. I'm really going to be interested to see what Davis's role is in the future. He wasn't in the game, I think, at the end after he dropped the ball.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you're going to need him, and then hopefully Nelson can burn a couple times too. He caught one touchdown over the top, which is good. It's on a third down, and I really wish on third downs they would just get the first down rather than, you know, go if it's third and eight, get 8 yards. Don't throw a 20-yard bomb that has, you know, a chance of being – it's a high-difficulty play. They seem to do that a lot. You say it's because that's what the defense gives you and they just take it. I don't like it. I wish they would just move the sticks consistently and, you know, go down the field more on first and second down.
It is more of what they do, I think, on like a third and three or a third and two, especially when they're, you know, in the red zone. It's not uncommon at all to see them – you know, not play it for the first down, but play it for the touchdown. And I'm guessing there's a couple things behind that. One is because I think the coverage, the defense is generally going to be trying to, you know, take away the first down. They're going to be kind of jammed up. So that theoretically should allow you to go over the top and get the touchdown there. On the other hand, if they're going to, you know, play for that, well, that's going to free up, you know, the underneath stuff to get the first down. And when you trust your field goal kicker, you know, when you're inside the 25, yeah, we have the luxury of going for it or going for a touchdown in third and three, even if we don't get it, because we know we're going to come away with some points because we have a guy who's all but automatic. So I think a lot. I mean, I've never heard anyone say this, but this is my theory on why they like to do that on what would normally be, let's just get, you know, 3 or 4 yards, get the first down, move the sticks. They do like to go for the touchdown in those situations. And more times than not, it works. It worked yesterday. It was very effective for them because, you know, teams trying to take away the first down, and fine, then we'll just take the touchdown instead. And they got some good receptions, some good passes, too, by Rodgers. He, you know, he looked very much like his old self. So it was great. It was great to see that all the way around.
Yeah, it's on the first field goal when it was 21-3. The field goal they scored to go up 24-3. As example, it was third and three on the Detroit 18.
Right. Yep.
And he throws, you know, into the end zone. Right. Nelson is covered. It's a very difficult pass to catch. I mean, sometimes he catches those, but he went over the top. You know, it's one of those where he's not necessarily open, but he's going to lay it up there. And you know, I feel like that's kind of a 50-50 ball. I would think you try to do what Detroit did all game, is get a tight end, a run out, turn around, throw it to him for 4 yards, get a first down, and then go to Nelson on the next play. But They either the defense is taking that away, and MacArthur would tell me, "Well, no kidding. If I could, I would." But they don't give it to you. They're giving us Nelson, so I got to go there. To me, I don't know if that's maybe McCarthy, it's the play, or it's Rodgers, you know, wants to always go for it. But that's a little troubling. I know other people have commented on that too. That frustrates people. Let's see what happens.
It's counterintuitive. I know, you know, because usually you want to move the sticks, but when you're that close, I mean, if they're going to give you the chance for the touchdown, that just does seem to be their philosophy. I don't know if it's Rodgers. I think it's just kind of a general philosophical mindset that in these situations we're going to look for the touchdown and, you know, not just try to get the 3 yards that we need.
Yeah. Yeah, it is counterintuitive. It's almost like, you know, if you're bowling, there's one pin still up, and rather than really concentrate on you just roll it as hard as you can. You know, it just seems like it is counterintuitive.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it does.
Anyway, should we take a break?
I think we should take a break. Packers moved to 2-1 on the season now by virtue of a 34-27 victory over the Detroit Lions at Lambeau Field. Dave and I were witness to the fact. And it was spectacular, let me tell you that much. So we're going to take just a second now. In fact, we're going to answer the question when we do the private podcast for our contributors. What do we do during these breaks? Well,
how long is that break?
How long is that break, and what do you guys do? Well, I'll tell you right now, it's going to be long enough for us to recalibrate the machinery to make sure Pamela is running the way she needs to. And we are going to be back with more Packers Therapy right after this. Chris and Dave back with more Packers Therapy. Talking about the Packers victory, we'll maybe touch on a few more things along the way. But we really should take a moment, Dave, and thank the people that have been generous in supporting Packers Therapy via PayPal. You want to talk about that a little bit, who our donors were?
Yeah, I think we got a big push before the game, and then it slowed down a bit for this last week. So this week we had let me look at my activity here. Greg Smith, who has been
but that's Greg X Smith. Now, have we decided what the X stands for? Is it Xavier? Is it X-ray? Perhaps
rated.
What was that?
X-rated.
X-rated.
Yeah.
I guess it's got to be Xavier. Maybe Greg will write and tell us, but yeah.
There's a Racer X on Speed Racer. Maybe he's
maybe that's it.
Is that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Well, he gave a very nice gift. Thank you very much. And then, of course, you know, Mike Miller does such a good job. Mitno, another 69 cents. I think this is the third week. I think you need to talk to him. I think you need
I don't understand the 69 part of it, Dave. Can you explain that to me?
Okay. Those two were the ones that gave. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to leave the PayPal account open for those who haven't given yet. And if you want to get the special podcast that we're going to release next week, during the bye week, we're going to put it together. And I think what I'm going to do is, based on people's the activity through PayPal, I have your email addresses. So contact me if that address is not correct. But I will send an email to you as soon as I can. I'll give you instructions on how to open up a Dropbox account, which will have a podcast. And also I took some video of our experience at Lambeau Field, including the flyover, which was
awesome.
Oh, just incredible.
Yeah, it was electrifying.
That is worth giving just to get this alone. So you'll get instructions, Dropbox, download it. You'll get a podcast or an MP3 that's basically a podcast and a video file that you can check out what we did as where we sat and see what we saw. If you give throughout the year, we'll just respond by giving you those instructions. So you feel free to do that. Or if you just feel like giving us money. I mean, some people have said they just want to give us money. Yeah, you believe that?
Well, yeah, because some people feel that they would pay for this thing. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, we do about 20 podcasts a year. We do the 16 regular season games. We do the 4 preseason games. If they play in the postseason, so, you know, 20, 23 podcasts a year, something like that. And so we've got a lot of people that have been given $20, you know, a dollar a week. And that's terrific. We really appreciate that. So I don't know how much this is worth to people, but I don't know how many we have that given, Dave. You have a guess? It must be a couple dozen at least, huh?
Yeah, more than that. Yeah. It's probably, I was going to say over 30.
Over 30, yeah.
I think so. So, yeah, people have been very generous. I think people have responded over the years to say it'd be nice to thank us in some way, and you have. I mean, that was a great, great experience. Felt extra great to know that that was basically a gift from people that have been friends to us through all these years, and we had such a great time. So we want to pay that back by hopefully giving you, like I said, the special podcast and the video, and just we'll continue to do this, and once people stop giving, we will cut this off immediately.
So fast, your head will spin. Well, I want to acknowledge some of the emailers, too. Every week we get email. We can't read them all. I mean, we do read them all, but we can't read them all on the air. But I do want to acknowledge some people that have been in touch with us. Our buddy Richard from Michigan, we butchered his name. We weren't able to figure out how to pronounce it. Well, he thoughtfully provided a pronouncer for us. It's Durain. Like he says, like Durain is falling from the sky. Nicely done, Richard. We do appreciate that. Durain falls mainly in Michigan. Apparently, Richard, a regular correspondent. I think he might have been one of the generous folks that also sent us some money along the way, too.
Yes, he did.
Also heard this week from Peter Spielbauer from the Twin Cities. Sends a nice little picture of the was it the Star Tribune where they showed the Packer quarterbacks over the past like 25 years and then the list of Viking starting quarterbacks over the same period of time.
Yeah, it's a great picture. It shows
there was five Packer starting quarterbacks.
Yeah, including Seneca Wallace and Scott Tuzin,
who had maybe two or three games. Matt Flynn, what did Matt Flynn have? Maybe five games or so during that time. And then, of course, 12-4, and they did the majority of the starting. But the list of, you know, Vikings quarterbacks over that time, let me see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 40, about 20 guys, you know, just incredible.
Well, what's funny is the five they show in the Packers are, you know, big pictures of them, and then you've got posted stamp size pictures of all the Minnesota quarterbacks. It's awesome.
It is.
Whoa, there's a big bug in here.
Peter, thank you for sending us that. We do appreciate it. We got a nice chuckle out of that one. Also, we got a couple of people that were in touch just to say, hey, have a good time at the game. They remembered that we were going to be going. Jared Van Cleve was one of those people. Thank you for thinking of us on game day. Also, our guy Chuck B, Mr. Apple himself, was in touch with his good wishes. So, as always, Chuck, we do appreciate that. Let's see, who else do we have? Oh, of course, we heard from our ship at sea on the USS Ronald Reagan, senior chief petty officer himself, Tom Glazel, checking in for duty. From the USS Ronald Reagan, the guy took time, and they're on a 2-month cruise of the Pacific Ocean, and
playing war games out there or something,
right? And I mean, like for realsies. I mean, this isn't something you're sitting in your basement playing. He's out there doing it for real. I guess it was his turn to get the internet on the ship, and I guess he could have written to his wife, children, mother, father. Instead, he wrote to us. So
he could have sent the plans that were being attacked, but no. He sent an email to us. That's right.
We really do appreciate that, and is also a part of our military contingent. Our military attaché, Captain Dave, as he so often is, in touch with us again. Really good to hear from you all the time, Dave. We definitely do appreciate that. We also heard from Brad. Brad Elliott being in touch with us. He said he was definitely going to be looking for us in the crowd at Lambeau. I'm sure you were able to see us. I was, of course, sweating through my pants, so that was probably easy to find me.
He probably saw you and walked away.
From my sodden jeans, as it were. Brad, thank you for being in touch and for looking at us, looking for us through the crowd. And who else do we hear from? Did I get everybody there? Greg with the very kind gift that Greg gave us to add to the amount of money that made it possible for us to go to the game and also made it possible for you to put a little gas in your car because you drove up from St. Louis to Green Bay, and you know, I guess you probably stopped at McDonald's a couple times or something like that too.
I did. And someone thought, so someone, a fan ran on the field. And one of the great things about being at the game is you get to see that, right? You don't get to see it on TV. But they ran the field, and someone asked if that was that one of us. And
I'm going to look that up. I think that was someone, I think, no, it wasn't all the footballs, because that's the real Greg X. Smith's handle. Was it Patrick? Patrick Keough was in touch with us, but I don't think it was him. I'll look back and see, but somebody on Twitter was speculating that that was probably you or me. No, it wasn't. But that's one of the great things. Yeah, you see things at the game that you don't see, like at the halftime. I don't know if anyone showed you know, the halftime thing, because it was Hall of Fame. It was Alumni Weekend.
Alumni Weekend,
yeah,
right.
And there must have been 25 or so vintage Packers, most of whom we remember. There was a couple guys I didn't recall. And there were some guys I recall were kind of obscure, like Tiger Green.
Yeah.
You know, Forrest Gregg was there. He was in a wheelchair. They had to wheel him out. Jim Taylor showed up wearing his Hall of Fame blazer, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Really, come on, Jim. I mean, but on the other hand, if I was in the Hall of Fame and my name was up on the Ring of Honor, I would probably wear my Hall of Fame blazer, too.
Right.
The big ovation at the end, though, was for Mike Holmgren. He was the last guy out of the tunnel, got a huge ovation from the crowd, and I thought that was a nice moment. My feelings about Holmgren are conflicted, maybe a little bit like they are about Brett Favre. Because the way Holmgren left, I can't blame him, but it didn't leave a good taste in my mouth. But apparently, among most Packer fans, it's all has been forgotten, and he was very warmly received.
I thought the best reception for me was from Kenny Stills, who
ran out of the tunnel, and he hit Matt Sui with his forearm and laid him right out.
Yeah, I don't know. People who haven't watched the Packers for a long time, back when the Packers were terrible, look up on YouTube Kenny Stills and Matt Sui, or just Kenny Stills and Bears.
You've got to find it, because there is a YouTube of this thing. And
yeah.
It is, I mean, from a Packer fan's perspective, it's hilarious. The play is over for, what, 3 seconds, 5 seconds?
It's so late, it doesn't get called because no one's watching.
Everyone is stunned. What just happened here? You know, it was good old Wisconsin Badger Kenny Stills, whose son is, I think, might still be playing in the NFL, came in and just laid out Matt Sui. It was fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it came like flying from the right side of the screen, and you know, Matt Sui's just watching everyone get off the pile. It was such a late hit, but yeah, I don't think, was it called?
Oh yeah,
because it was called.
Yeah,
okay.
And was that the same game or was it a different game?
When
Charles
McMahon
Martin,
got slammed.
Yeah, it took Jim McMahon and turned him upside down, and I think McMahon injured his shoulder on that play, right? And
I don't think he came back that season.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. And so this was the time when Forrest Gregg was coaching the Packers, and our older Packer fans, and Dave and I guess are part of the older Packer fans, will remember this era. The Packers weren't bad. I mean, they were kind of a 500 team in those days, but the Bears were terrific. I mean, they had a great defense and enough offense. They won a world championship during this particular era. But the games between the Packers and Bears were just vicious on both sides of the ball. You might remember, too, when that was when Walter Payton was playing and goes out of bounds and winds up getting tackled and taken over the bench. And
right,
I forgot
right.
who was tackling him. Was it like Chuck Cecil or somebody like it? It was just yeah. really, really brutal. And those games were legendary.
Well, Charles Martin had a towel and he had the Bears' numbers of who he was going to take out.
Right.
And McMahon was one, and he did. He took him right out. He body slammed him like a wrestler.
Yeah.
It was an interception.
Him up and threw him down. Yeah.
On his shoulder. Yeah.
Absolutely
he was
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the good old days. Well, and Forrest Gregg. Was there too? He could have given Kenny Stills a high five if he.
Well, the wheelchair.
He was alive. Yeah,
the wheelchair was a problem. Forrest did not look so good, but Lynn Dickey was there.
Yep.
And it was interesting because Lynn Dickey was, of course, benched by Forrest Gregg, that led to his leaving the team. Yeah, those were the 80s were tough. The 80s were tough for the Packers. You know, started out with Bart Starr and. You know, Bart eventually gets fired. They bring in Forrest Gregg, and he lasts about four seasons, and he quits to go coach at SMU. And then Lindy Infante comes in, and it was a time of upheaval. The team was not doing well, but that was the cusp then of Ron Wolf coming in, and it was all good after that. But man, it was dicey there for a while.
Oh, it really was. Those were the years where there was a game when I was out of college, and they had the games in Milwaukee. My roommate and I had tickets, and it was pretty cold. We decided not to go.
Yeah.
That was where the Packers, that's the state of the Packers. I got just as angry and happy when they lost or won as I did now, but they were so bad that I thought, I don't really feel like going. So we ate the tickets, and even though, literally it was like 10 minutes away from our apartment, and I did not go to a Packer game. This weekend I drove over 12 to 15 hours to go see a game, so lots of change.
Being there, you can really soak up that particular ambience. One thing that wasn't so much fun was the security lines. If people are thinking of going to a Packer game, don't want to complain about it because it's still a great experience. But what would you say? We had about a half hour maybe in the security line?
Yeah. And it was a blob. It wasn't a line. It was just a blob of people trying to all get through the metal detector. Yeah, it took a long time.
So if you're coming to a Packer game, you should be prepared the new reality of security in the United States, but especially around large scale events. This is one of those deals. You should be prepared to wait, and you're going to have to go through a metal detector like you used to go through at the airport before they got the new machines in. It's that kind of deal. You got your wallet and your phone and stuff. Got to go on on the side, and just be prepared for that level of security if you're lucky enough to go to a Packer game.
And when you get up to the metal detector, get the metal out of your pocket.
The woman ahead of me, she has on all of those bracelets, and it's she didn't know this was going to be a problem. I felt bad for her because, they made her, move to the side then, and she must have had on, 10 of these different bracelets. She's struggling to get them out, and she's embarrassed, but she had a half an hour to figure this out.
Yeah, I know. And they said to her, though, they're like, you can either take it off and take it to the side, or you can throw it away if you want. And I thought that was great. But, I had no sympathy for her like you. I was quite upset that we had to wait for them. But we got through. We saw the kickoff. We saw the national anthem. We saw the flyover. And our listeners can, too. We'll put that video together.
Yes. And so. Everyone who has contributed will get an email from us, and you'll get a chance to download that. $10, I think, was the minimum. We got a very nice, and I wish I would have remembered now, who sent us the email with a bunch of suggested questions, and we're going to work off that, too, when we are recording our special podcast during the bye week. And it was more of kind of it's an inside baseball or inside football, as it was. Look at the podcast and its origins and the backstories and that kind of stuff. And I think he even asked things like, so what kind of setup do you guys have? Because we're in different cities when we do this. And so people were kind of curious about all that stuff and some of the background about us too. So we'll blow on about that in the special Contributors Only podcast. And if you do give via PayPal, later on in the season, we will also send you the login information. So if you wind up giving next month or in November or something like that, you can get in on this too.
And no refunds, because there was no promise that this podcast would be good.
No.
It's the same quality.
It's going to be the same crap that people have been listening to since 2005. You can promise that. Okay, so what else? Is it time for betting lines yet?
It is time for betting lines.
Okay, it's time for the betting lines on Packers Therapy. So, Dave, what do you got?
We have a clear winner, although I have to I don't know if I can determine that. Well, we'll figure it out as we go. Let's see what happens. Number one, I had asked you how many turnovers would the Packers create. You set the line at 1.5. It's the under. Mike, wait a minute.
Because there's only the one turnover. That was the magnificent play by Demaryius Randall, who I found out, did you know why he left the game? We were wondering why he left the game, and he was sick. I guess he had some kind of illness that was going on. So he made a great play there, and that was the only turnover of the game. He was out for a while, came back, did not play very well, but I guess he was sick, so I'll give him a pass. But that was the only turnover.
That's correct. I just paused it, the podcast, because you are correct. It was one. I had the over, so I was incorrect. Number two, Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating. That was something that was much talked about, and we tried to hear what the number was as we were walking out of the stadium, and I think you finally heard it on the radio. The answer, it was 129.3. You set the line at 91.5, so he definitely blew away yours.
Way ahead, yeah.
And I would make fun of you except for the fact that I said under. So I was very even worse off. Number three, how many sacks would Green Bay have? You set the line at 4.5. They had three. So the under one, I had that one correct. How many attempts would Eddie Lacy have in rushing the football? You set the line at 14.5. He had 17. Pretty close. Pretty good. The over, I had that one correct. Tight end catches, you set the line at 7.5. The actual number is 4. Do you agree with
now,
that?
No. In my defense, I didn't expect Cook to go out with an injury.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if he'd have been more part of the game.
The first half, too, right? It was fairly early on.
Like right away.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if he'd have been even more of a factor. We did see Perillo. I didn't see him. He had one catch.
Sure, yeah.
I'm surprised. He's the – when it's 3rd and 3 and you need 4 yards, Perillo is the guy turn around, and throw it to him. So let's see if that happens in the future. So the under was correct. I got that one right. I might have had a decent week. How many rushing attempts? Attempts will Aaron Rodgers have? Aaron Rodgers rushing attempts. You set the line at 3.5. The actual number is 5, so the over is correct. And one got held back by that holding penalty by Bulaga,
right?
Which that would have been a touchdown, I think, because he rushed for a first down to the Detroit, 10-yard line or something.
Mm-hmm.
So one got taken away, but the over still stood. Number 7, how many targets for Davante Adams? This is something we haven't talked about yet. You set the line at 7.5. The actual number is 2. I actually think this is partially why the offense did better.
Yep.
So much of their offense was funneled through Adams for the last, 10 games, do you think, ever since Nelson went down?
Well,
and this year.
Certainly last year, you remember when we went to the Lions game last year with Dr. Klaus. I think there was 21 targets. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but it was an absurd number of targets for Davante Adams. And he's just not open enough, and he's also – his hands aren't sure enough. I think they're a lot better when they keep the targets to him under 5.
I agree. I was just going to say 2 to 5. I think that's about right. James Jones-like quality, and you're Nelson, you're Cobb – your Montgomery, I think Aberderis. I was surprised Aberderis didn't even sniff the field except for on special teams.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but so the under was correct on that one, and there is a huge bug flying around my room right now. I'm very much on
is
edge.
Is the NSA visiting again? Is that the
different kind of bug?
Okay, sorry.
This is a real big scary one. And then we kind of screwed up the tiebreaker. You set the tiebreaker line at 41. And then I, like an idiot, said the under instead of saying that was the tiebreaker. But the over was correct. We just kind of threw a curveball at Mike. But he figured it out. And the winner this week is Jared Stevenson. He got 6 correct, 6 out of 8, which – now,
this is Jared Stevenson, not Jared Van Cleve, okay, because we have all kinds of Jareds who listen to this program. Not Jared from Subway, though.
No.
He has plenty of time in his hands now to listen to us.
Yes, that's right. We don't want to be a part associated with that, Jared. I had 5 correct, so I was not completely off. I just looking at the list of people, we had quite a few people that played this week. We had, it looks like maybe 15 people played this week. It's increasing in its popularity. I hope everyone gets a chance to play. Mike does a great job. If you want to play this week, you send your email to mittnomiller. Oh, there's that bug. Oh, my gosh. It's so big. It's like a huge mosquito.
Does it say Zika on the side of it?
I hope not. It's big enough to have advertising on the side. I don't think I got it. So this could happen again. Mitno Miller is mitnomiller@gmail.com. You can send your emails to him on this week's list. Are you ready for that?
I am all set. It's time now to set the betting lines. And, of course, what the winners get, they get an entire week in the luxury and comfort and decadence that is the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, located just off the strip in lovely Laughlin, Nevada. So Jared Stevenson will go there this week. We'll get the bunk beds out of there. It's going to be you, and I think Susie Faber-Hamilton will be visiting. So let's go. Let's go right now to the betting lines here. What do we got, Dave?
All right. So I try to keep them current. Try to keep them relevant. Number one, how many touchdowns would Jordy Nelson catch?
Jordy Nelson had two touchdown catches this past week. He looked like Jordy Nelson very nearly. One of the things we noticed when Jordy had his 49-yard scamper, he didn't quite seem totally fluid. Now, was that because he's recovering from the knee injury? Is it because he's just a little bit older? It seemed to me like Jordy Nelson that I remember would have, you know, taken that one the rest of the way. As it was, he's looking pretty good. Two touchdown catches. I don't expect that he'll do that against the Giants, even though they'll be playing at home in 2 weeks. I am going to say like that he'll be good for a touchdown, so I'm going to set the line at 1.5.
You're going to set 1.5. I'll take the under. I feel like teams are now going to adjust to him, and I feel like they're going to go back and they're going to play around with the playbook a bit. I bet you're going to see it spread out a bit more. So I'm going to guess that he's not going to get the two like he got this week. Number two, one of the stats that is pretty amazing that someone pointed out, and now I see it here on my screen, is that they had 9 tackles for loss.
That was remarkable. I heard the same thing. And that comes – did they have 10 in the first game maybe?
Did they? Is that
this,
right? Yeah.
This is the run defense, at least, is really attacking. And they had 9 tackles for loss when they were playing with, you know, Bud and Joe and Bill. I mean, some of these guys that you just don't know. I mean, Lowry was in there, Clark, Ringo, John Lennon, I think, was playing in there too. I mean, they had guys that, you know, were not the typical run stuffers. There was no LaTroy Guyon. You know, Mike Pinnell is, you know, still – out on his suspension. Of course, B.J. Raji is nowhere to be seen. But yeah,
and not missed, by the way.
He doesn't seem to be at all. They are stout against the run, and 9 tackles for a loss. I mean, that doesn't even happen that much in college. I mean, they are really terrific against the run.
Yeah. So what's the line for tackles for loss next week?
Against the Giants, I think they'll have guy on back. They should. I don't think Pinnell's eligible to come back at this point, and B.J. Raji ain't walking through that door. You'd like to think Matthews is back at that time. Let me set tackles for loss. I'm going to set the over-under at 4.5.
Okay, I'm going to take the under. I mean, they're doing very well, and let's see. A lot of linebackers did. It was
They knife in from the side. I mean, I think Fackrell might have had
Fackrell one. Perry had two. I think the first game play in the game was tackle for loss. Jake Ryan had two. Gunter had one. He kind of flew in. Elliott. Dean Lowry had a showing.
And I think we should take a second and celebrate those inside linebackers. You remember all the angst in the offseason, even the preseason?
Yeah.
I got to say, Joe Thomas, when he hits a guy, the guy stays hit.
Yeah, I don't know if that showed on TV. He laid out their tight end on an incomplete pass. He is stout.
I was surprised because, you know, he gained 10 pounds in the offseason. I'm guessing it must have been, you know, 10 pounds of lead or titanium. I mean, the guy is not that big, but boy, does he let it happen. Jake Ryan's taken a huge jump forward. And I got to say, Martinez, it looks like he's the real deal. They got 3 really nice inside backers.
Yeah, that is not a problem for them right now. Now, they haven't – I don't know if they played – you know, what are teams that have really good running games?
Minnesota's supposed to, but, yeah.
That's true. And they did – you know, they basically took him out.
Literally.
They did. Yeah, you know, not many teams. I guess if they play Carolina, but now I know their main guy is out because he's on my fantasy team as well. But, you know, Carolina's kind of old school, run the ball, but they are quicker. Actually, the whole defense is just quicker. Yeah. And you put Matthews back in there. I think the defense can do their job. Even giving up 27 to Detroit the way it happened, that's not great. But I think I'm willing to bet with this defense, especially if the offense will stay on the field, get first down, score, and not put so much pressure on the defense. But anyway, so you said 4.5. I'll take
the
under.
Okay.
By the way, you mentioned B.J. Raji, and I thought, you know, I didn't even remember him. You know who else I
– Wow.
Do you know who else I don't – Yeah. You know who else I don't miss?
Who?
Josh Sitton.
You know, that's – no, we were talking about that. Now, I don't break down the tape. I don't watch the All-22 and isolate on, you know, certain play, especially, you know, not like the left guard play. But – you know, it doesn't seem as though this is like a Will Whitaker turnstile, you know, kind of guy. It seems like Lane Taylor is adequate, at the least. He's not a liability, at least to this point. Maybe when they start facing some, you know, more stout defensive tackles, I'm sure he's going to have a bad game or two. But he's been okay. And if Sitton really was a disruptive force in the locker room, he's older, you can't rely on him, you know, maybe Ted Thompson was right. I mean, maybe they can get by without him. I guess we'll, you know, have to wait the rest of the season. But so far, you know, it doesn't appear as though they missed Josh Sitton at all.
Yeah, I'm not going to go so far as to say Ted Thompson's right. Nah, but
of course you're not going
to. I don't miss Sitton at this point. And, again, I think it's a function of the guards just not be that important.
Yeah.
All right, so we're on number three. This is taking a while. Number three, how many receiving yards will Odell Beckham Jr. have? I don't know much about the Giants. I know he is pretty spectacular. And we have given up a ton of yards to teams' number one receivers.
Yeah.
How many receiving yards do you think he'll have?
Well, that's a great question because – you know, they have not, and I don't know if we're going to see Sam Shields back. You know, their thinking is that, you know, maybe with this time he will have missed in, what, four games maybe, something like that. Will he be ready? He missed a full month last time he had this. If he's not back, then you're going to have to think he's going to have a big day. He's a good player. They got a good offense there. I don't know. I think I'm going to put the over-under on yardage for Odell Beckham Jr. I'm going to put a 110.
110. All right. I'm going to take the over.
Oh.
I'm going to take the over
on
that. Okay. Also, I threw this in. I had it last week, I guess, is how many turnovers will Green Bay cause? I feel like in beating the Giants I think the Giants are a team that gives them trouble. Eli Manning has just kind of given us fits over time. I think if we win, I think we're going to have to get some turnovers here. And they did turn the ball over, I think, in their last game. How many turnovers do you think our defense causes or special teams?
Well, wait, no. Is it defense plus special teams?
Both. Yes.
Okay.
Both. How many turnovers?
Okay. Yep. How many turnovers for the Giants? You know, I think this Packers defense is going to be a top half of the league defense. Based on what I've seen, they're so stout against the run, teams become one-dimensional. Now, the one dimension's been pretty effective so far for the opponents, but I don't see them as the kind of defense that is going to be forcing a lot of turnovers. I think they're going to be a good enough defense, you know, like a number, you know, 14 in the league kind of defense. Special teams, boy, now that adds a whole nother. You know, there's so many kickoffs now that don't get returned, which means you're not going to have the turnovers that go with that. And a lot of punts, a lot of fair catches. Of course, Packers didn't punt much either. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of turnovers there. So I'm going to set the over-under on turnovers that the Packers force that the Giants allow. I'll set it at 1.5.
All right, I'm taking the over on that. I just feel like they –
I think it'll be more than two.
I like
huh?
their defense.
Wow.
I think it'll be two or more. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I like their defense, but not that much yet.
I think they're going to cause a couple fumbles. Eli Manning had, a fumble.
It is true. Now, Manning does have games where he can throw a lot of picks, too, and that's a good That's a good point. I just don't know that the Packer defense is going to – be the kind that's going to force it. Nah, if they get everybody back, then maybe they put on a good pass rush and that forces them into mistakes. But I don't know. I'm going to stick with that 1.5.
All right, I'm going to go with over. Number five. How many attempts, not catches, but attempts, will they make Trevor Davis's way?
Now, he had two targets this time around, right? The one long, 71 yards in the air bomb that wound up being pass interference. And then,
do they count that?
That's a good question. I guess they don't count it, right? Because
I don't see him on the stat chart at all. So
they must have he dropped one ball, right? So he must have been.
Well, he doesn't get on the chart because
he had one target. So they don't count the So officially,
we know he was thrown.
He had one target officially, but there were two balls thrown his way. If you discount
that'll
the penalty.
Count. Mike, that counts.
So how many targets will he have? I'm going to set that, believe it or not, at 0.5.
All right. I'm going to take the over. I think they – that's what the Packers do. I think that was successful. I think they try one more shot to him. So I think he'll get at least one.
My guess is this. Now, this is what I'm basing it on. My guess is that the people's champ is going to get the club off his hand. On time for the next game, and he will be playing the Trevor Davis role.
Ah.
Yeah.
You're right. If that's true, I'm going to stay with the over, but that's an interesting – I wish I followed the Packers more like you.
I don't know that he's going to. I mean, I'm just speculating now that it's about that time, and, there's 2 weeks, and I think they'll want to get him back in action.
Yeah. That's an interesting – can you imagine Davis and Janis – flanked out wide.
Yes, I can.
And then you've got
And nobody's catching a single pass because those guys can't catch. So
they do. Do you call them posts? I guess that's they'd just be fly.
They'd be fly
patterns.
Right? The ones.
So you got Janis and Davis, and then you've got Cobb and Montgomery in the backfield. What would you do as a defense? How would you? You'd be spread out. There's no. Block clogging up the middle if you ran that play. I hope McCarthy is still listening to our show.
Well, I actually think that they might look at that at some point in this season. I think that would cause problems.
I think there's no way they would ever do that, but I would think that'd be really interesting. Yeah. Number six, how many rushing yards will Cobb and Montgomery have from line of scrimmage?
Okay, they only had one attempt for Montgomery this past week, zero for Cobb. Rushing yardage? You want not number of carries, you want yardage, right?
Yeah, rushing yards, yes. I assume this might be 0.5, too.
Oh, God. I'm going to put the rushing yardage for the two of them combined at – I'm going to go 18.
18 yards?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to take the under on that. Number seven, just giving up to the defense. How many rushing yards do you think they will allow to the Giants?
Now, this is interesting because so often teams look different as the year goes on. I mean, they start out crappy and they wind up being a stout rushing defense. That happened in the Super Bowl season, you might recall, when they got the big fat guy from the Jets who went on to play so well for them.
Was he Green?
Howard
Green?
Yeah. Yeah. These things do change over the course of the year. I don't think it's going to change yet, though. I don't think they'll be as good. I think they've given, 125 yards through three games, something like that?
Yeah, I think they said they just passed 100. I thought, they gave up 100 to the Lions? They meant 100
for the three games.
For the season.
It has been crazy. I think they are the number one rushing defense in the National Football League. It's asking a lot to 40 yards every game, but I still think that they'll be stout. And I'm going to put the over under for rushing yardage at 75.
All right, Giants 75. That's a good line. I don't. My coin flip. I'll say the under.
Ooh.
I'll stick with the trend.
Okay.
Okay, and then the tiebreaker will be the total score. I'm not going to screw up this all time, right, Mike. Just say what the total score is, and you will enter in your tiebreaker.
All right. So if,
that's your betting lines.
Yeah. If you want to play the betting lines, you send yourself an email. Not yourself. You send an email.
Yeah.
Yourself will send an email.
It's CC Mike.
Yeah. To mitnomiller@gmail.com. mitnomiller@gmail.com. Play along in the betting lines. You get to join. Well, I guess you won't join Jared Stevens, and he'll have his shit moved out of there in time. And then you can move in the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino with locations in Atlantic City, Reno, Laughlin, and, of course, our three hotels in Las Vegas. So check out those things. It is a wonderful experience indeed. So what's left yet on our agenda, Dave?
Pop culture.
Oh, God, yes, pop culture.
Do you have any?
No. To be very candid, I have actually been busy doing my regular job last week and again this week. I haven't spent much time in front of the tube at all. I have read only kind of, you know, work-related type stuff. So I have been actually unable to indulge in pop culture. But I know you, Dave, on the other hand, always dip your toe into the pop culture waters. So what do you got?
Yes, I do. I have two recommendations. Both are darker, or – I mean, one is real-life dark and one is just fictional dark. But Jerry Van Cleve had mentioned this week, or I think it was this week, there's a podcast that he recommended along the lines of Serial that we had listened to as a podcast, and Making a Murderer, which was the documentary on Netflix. This one's called – it's a podcast called In the Dark. And I listened to all four almost back to back to back to back. There were four out there so far. I drive up to Green Bay and back. And it's a investigative reporter looking back at a crime. This one is a parent's worst nightmare. Literally, a younger child was abducted and killed. But the investigative reporter goes and investigates what the steps the police took, and to try to find, you know, who did this, what was the murderer. And it was a big story. It happened in Minnesota. It's hard to recommend because it's such a sad, they talk to the parents and it's gut-wrenching to listen to, but man, it is really, really an interesting listen. And, and I don't know if it's, for some people it might just be too much and depressing, but I just found it really fascinating. So, Jerry, that was a really good recommendation. If you like Making a Murderer, that sort of thing, that was very good. And then more for lighter but still kind of the darker side, I saw the movie Don't Breathe. Have you seen this movie, Chris? I'm guessing no.
It sounds terrifying, but, you know.
So Don't Breathe, actually, for a tomato rating, I think it's up in the 70s or 80s for kind of a horror movie. Mm-hmm. It's not a horror movie that's like demonic or supernatural.
A horror movie, not a horror movie. Okay, good. I want to make sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, did my accent say horror?
Horror movie. Okay, got it.
Yes. Yeah, because if it was a horror movie, it would not be Don't Breathe. That
well,
would,
or maybe that would be the appropriate name for it. I don't know.
Don't Breathe, it's about these kids who go to rob someone in their home, and it's this man is blind, and he basically turns the table on them and proceeds to terrify the heck out of them. And it was really well done.
That sounds good.
It was scary, but it was fun scary. I know Blair Witch kind of came out, and that's along the same lines. But I heard that was not nearly as good, but this one is rated high. And I went to see it because my son is working at the movie theater, and he was working late. And I thought, I'll see a movie by myself and then leave with him when he's done with his shift. And so this was the highest rated one. I thought, I don't like scary movies necessarily, but especially by myself. And at first, I was the only one in the theater, which is scary. But you know what's scary, scarier than being the only one in the theater?
No.
Is being one of two people in the theater.
Oh, God. That, yeah, okay. That wins, definitely, yeah.
Right? Yeah, and they're sitting behind you. So that I got a double scare when I was by myself, I thought that's kind of creepy. But then the person who sat behind me, I definitely look behind me once in a while. But it's a fun scare if you like that sort of thing. It's really well done. I had a great time with it. So go see Don't Breathe. I think it's a movie that Dr. Klaus would enjoy because we like the same things. And I bring that up because Dr. Klaus sent a younger picture of himself.
Oh, man.
Is what a handsome guy, that guy.
Yeah, but who do you think was more handsome? His younger son, who had his first Holy Communion, or young Dr. Klaus? I mean, it's clear it's a father-son deal. Both of these guys, you know, walked out of the pages of Tiger Beat or something. These are good-looking Norwegian men, let me tell you that. Young Dr. Klaus and young Dr. Klaus's son. Wow, you know, Abercrombie and Fitch, baby, I tell you.
Well,
getting it done.
That's my recommendation for pop culture this week.
Well, okay.
I think that ends the...
But when you were talking about Don't Breathe, reminded me of a movie that I didn't watch it this week. I watched it many years ago, and I've seen it a couple times. But it's similar in plot to a film called Wait Until Dark. Do you remember this movie?
No.
It came out when I was quite young. I didn't see it till I was older. But it is and I will quote the Wikipedia description for you, a psychological horror film starring Audrey Hepburn as a young blind woman and Alan Arkin as a violent criminal searching for drugs and Richard Crenna as another criminal who's being supported by Jack Weston and Ephraim Zimbras Jr. Anyway, the deal is they break into this woman's house. Of course,
she's blind.
Yeah,
right?
she's blind, and it is definitely a psychological thriller horror movie. Audrey Hepburn. I don't know if you remember her. She was in Breakfast at Tiffany's and a number of movies. I think Roman Holiday. Maybe she was in. Terrific actress. Now late, sadly. And I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan of Alan Arkin. Even late his later days with Little Miss Sunshine, he was in that. I strongly recommend this film. The movie that Dave described sounds good to people, I would really recommend searching out Wait Until Dark. It's a 1967 film starring Audrey Hepburn. A great psychological horror thriller. Check that one out.
What's different about my movie is yours is the more traditional, where you think that someone's breaking in, blind person is the victim. How terrifying. This kind of turns on its ear. Well, the people breaking in become the victims of the blind person.
It's a great twist, yeah.
It's a good twist, and it makes sense to a degree. No one makes really stupid decisions of going in the basement when you really shouldn't go in the basement. It's good. So if you like scary stuff at all, I think you'll like this.
All right. That wraps up pop culture. Dave, is there anything else on our agenda we haven't crossed off yet?
Nope. We have seen it all, other than to say thank you once again to our listeners who let us go to the game. That was fun.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people that were really nice and sent in money, allowed us to have an absolutely great, great day together. Packers wind up winners on a beautiful early fall afternoon at Lambeau Field. They come away with a 34-27 victory. They now move to 2-1. They are trailing the Vikings, who are 3-0, and leading the NFC North. Packers get a bye week. Contributors to Packers Therapy do not get a bye week. They will get a podcast next week that Dave and I will produce and put in the Dropbox for you. The rest of you people, you cheapskates, damn it, who haven't given money yet at PayPal. By the way, that's PackersTherapy@yahoo.com at PayPal. We are accepting.
We should have said that.
Operators
really.
Are standing by now to take your contribution for this podcast. So we will have something for those people during the bye week. 2 weeks from now, Packers play Sunday Night Football against the New York Football Giants. After that game is over, Dave and I will be back with more Packers Therapy. But until then, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.